So I used to like constructing things, but now I have a six-month-old daughter, so I'm starting to deconstruct a lot of things. I'll be talking, hopefully, about all of these things. There's a question mark about whether I will have time to work on that. So I'll probably give you the result right now, and then if I have time to go to it, I'll explain through. So what I'll try to do is a bit of a follow-up on Shinji's talk earlier. I'm not going to go too much into the motivations of massive gravity, because he did an amazing job at that. And I really more want to see if we can build a theory of massive gravity from a gravitational framework. And for that, I'll start with 5D gravity. As Shinji mentioned, there's a lot of polemics whether massive gravity can work already as a fundamental theory, and then if it can work as a fundamental theory, a theoretical theory, whether you can have some viable phenomenology out of that. And so, not because I just want to redo everything from scratch, but just because to get a bit of an insight on how you can construct a theory of massive gravity and get a little bit of a building tool, it'd be nice to have some proceeding and starting from a higher dimensional picture. Before I go into that, let me just mention one of the motivation which was raised this morning on massive gravity when it comes to its distinction with a cosmological constant. It could be that some of the phenomenology that we get from massive gravity, at the end of the day, becomes very similar to a pure lambda CDM model from a phenomenological point of view, where the universe is just self-accelerating by itself, and so it's very hard to distinguish it between a self-acceleration or adding a cosmological constant just by itself. But one of the reasons myself and some of my collaborators started working on massive gravity in the first place was because of the hope that having a tuning on a parameter which is the mass of the graviton would actually be, from a theoretical point of view, a better tuning than if you had it on the cosmological constant in the first place. And this will only be true if you manage to go all the way down to building a theory of massive gravity and then computing the quantum corrections and seeing how stable the mass of the graviton is against itself, quantum corrections, and against quantum corrections from other matter field running around. So the good news is that now that we have a theory of massive gravity, we can actually go and compute these quantum corrections. And I'm just going to give you the details, the result, because I'm not sure I'm going to get to it. But it looks like if you look at the quantum corrections that you would get from any loop into the graviton mass, they themselves are always proportional to the graviton mass itself, such that if you send the mass of graviton to zero, you would get actually no quantum corrections to the graviton mass. So this you would expect just because you don't have a tuning of the mass of the graviton problem in GR, so you'd expect that actually when the mass of graviton is exactly zero, you're not going to have some quantum corrections to the graviton mass. But there is, at least in a number of degrees of freedom, a discontinuity between massive gravity and its GR counterpart. So there's still a lot of framework. This is more involved than just writing that down, and you need to take into account all the degrees of freedom that comes in and some, at some level, the discontinuity that comes in to be able to make that statement. Not only that happens, but also if you look at the quantum corrections arising from other matter fields that would come in, they would, to some extent, change the graviton mass, but still by an amount which is proportional to m. So you might have some some other mass coming in the game to some powers, but it's always in such a way that it actually becomes finite in the limit when m goes to zero. And not only would you expect to have some quantum corrections arising to the graviton mass, but also, as Shinji mentioned this morning, just a second, to have a theory of massive gravity which have no ghosts, you need a very precise structure of the potential. You can't just write down anything you want to do for your potential of massive gravity. And so you would expect then, if you have massive quantum corrections to come in, that they could potentially break the structure of your potential and give rise back to a ghost. Yeah? So, of course, it's not obvious. No, this result is absolutely not obvious. And then the main reason why it's not obvious is because it's a discontinuity in the limit when you send the graviton mass to zero. And I'm just going to give you the result right now because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to go through all the details of the calculation that led me to that. But just accept that, and if I have time, I'll get to it. And if not, I'm happy to talk about it later. And hopefully there'll be a paper that will come out soon. And as I have to mention, this result is already out in a paper as well. So you would expect as well from other matter field, which come in with their own mass scale, which is presumably much larger than the graviton mass, that they could potentially detune the structure of the potential and give rise to a mass, a ghost back into the, your theory of massive gravity. And if the mass of the ghost is also related to the mass of the new fields running around in your theory, you might think that you might be in trouble because you could have a mass of the ghost, typically, which is related to, for instance, you could have a mass of the ghost which could go like the Planck scale cube, and then the mu scale coming in your theory, and m to the, let me see, that's 13, let me see, to some power. Something like that. So if you had a new scalar field or a new field coming in your theory with which your graviton is interacting, you would expect, a priori, just doing a back of the envelope calculation, that these new fields coming in would detune the structure of your potential, and a priori, they could give rise to a ghost back in your theory, which could have a mass as low as that. And if that was present in your theory, that would be a disaster, because you would have a detuning of your potential as soon as you add something in your theory. However, if I get to the point at this level, what you can see is actually the mass of the ghost from detuning of the self-graviton interactions are always coming at the Planck scale. And if you have another scalar field coming in, another field coming in and interacting with gravity, what I will do is only lower the mass of the ghost up to a given energy. So if I'm thinking of a given mass that comes in my theory and the mass of the ghost, if the mass of the other scalar, other field is small enough, it's not going to affect the mass of the ghost. And it's only when you have a mass of other field, which is of the order of m Planck half, that these other field starts lowering the mass of the ghost up to a given scale. And then you can trust your theory, or you can integrate other fields out within your theory for this field all the way up to, if you think of M as being the cutoff, of something which is of the order of 1 giga electron volt. So actually, the detuning that you naively think would happen in your theory of massive gravity by integrating out other matter fields is actually much weaker than you would have anticipated. And you can integrate out matter field with a mass all the way up to the giga electron volt without giving rise to a ghost for your theory, which is lower than the giga electron volt. And this is not taking into account the Weinstein mechanism. Once you start taking into account the Weinstein mechanism, the theory is even better defined. So let me put that into parentheses for now, and I'll go into the deconstruction framework for massive gravity and go through this different, through the different point. So as we've seen this morning with Shinji's talk, as soon as we try to give the graviton a mass, you get a large polemic, and it's not very easy to think of how you could add a graviton a mass. So before just trying to do that from the outset, let me try to start with what I know. Let me start with general relativity. I know that this is a beautiful theory. And let me try to modify as little as I need to. And in particular, let me try to get massive gravity, not just by thinking of four-dimensional gravity and adding a mass term by hand, but rather starting from five-dimensional GR, which has actually 5 degrees of freedom, and try to, out of this theory, get a four-dimensional theory of massive gravity, which will also have 5 degrees of freedom. So if you start with 5D general relativity, and you have 5 degrees of freedom, and you want to get four-dimensional gravity in some limit, but you also want to have massive gravity, what you can do is either confine gravity on a brain, and this is the idea behind DGP, which was presented in 2000. And what you get out of this model is a model of soft massive gravity. If you think of the spectral representation of the modes that come in this theory, if I think of the different mode at a given mass mu squared and a spectral representation, as Paul mentioned this morning, you have something which is picked around a given energy scale, m, and this m square is related to the five-dimensional Planck scale and the four-dimensional Planck scale that lives on the brain. So this is soft massive gravity. So you don't really have a theory of massive gravity per se, where you don't really have gravitons with different poles at different values of m, but you have a kind of a resonance for your theory of soft massive gravity. As an alternative to confined gravity through our brain, what you can do is compactify your extra dimension. And then what the most naive thing you can get out of it is Kaluza-Klein theory by compactification. And what you would get is, actually, you discretize in a Fourier space your modes, and what you would get is a tower of modes. You could think of an infinite tower of modes, really. You have some modes all the way up to the five-dimensional Planck scale. All the way up to the five-dimensional Planck scale, and above that, I can't really think of that. So, and the size of the discretization between the different modes is related to the size of the extra dimension. So if you have a compactification, the extra dimension of size. And you have a total of n is m5l nodes, all the way up to the five-dimensional cutoff of your theory. So this is what Kaluza-Klein theory does. And actually, if you want to recover 5D gravity out of that, you need to integrate over all the Kaluza-Klein modes. You can do that. The only problem with this is that, there's no problem, but from a four-dimensional point of view, there's a lot of interactions between all of these modes. So as an alternative to Kaluza-Klein discretization of your extra dimension, what you can do is directly a discretization in the real space of your theory instead of in the Fourier space of your theory. And that's the idea behind deconstruction, where I start really from my five-dimensional extra dimension. I have my extra dimension here, and then here I have my transverse directions, which I want to keep, of size L. And I can compactify and add periodic boundary conditions in 0 and L. And then instead of considering this five-dimensional metric, which depends on all the coordinates, one and mu, and I'll choose for convenience to work in a gauge where I just excite the things along the transverse directions. Instead of considering that, I can discretize in real space. And instead of considering an infinite, a continuum of things along the extra dimension, I will just consider a finite number of sites along the extra dimensions. So out of the G mu nu of x and y, I will just consider some sites along the extra dimension, which only depends along of the transverse direction. And I can decide to have n such sites, and I can have a typical distance between the sites, which is in real space of the order lambda. And what I will end up with in the spectral representation in this case is something quite similar, where I have a series of modes from the spectral representation point of view, where the mass of the most of the heaviest mode in that case is 1 over lambda squared, and the typical distance is again 1 over L. And I have a number of modes, which is n is equal to L over lambda. So this is the idea behind deconstruction, and this deconstruction idea is really just a discretization, and it's what you would naively think you can do if you want to put a new theory on a computer. And that has been extremely successful in gauge theory, in particular for Young-Mill theory, in trying to build theories of interacting bosons, of lots of interacting gauge fields. And that works beautifully well for Young-Mill theory. So you can think, well, let's just use this construction setup to build a theory of many interacting spin to field from a four-dimensional point of view. So from a four-dimensional point of view here, I will have n metric j's, and they will be interacting in a way which has been set up to me from the five-dimensional picture. And if I start with a five-dimensional picture which is ghost-free, then I'll expect from a four-dimensional point of view that will be ghost-free as well. So you think you start really from a good point, from a good starting point, and you'll get back to your feet. So in this discretization, let me just write it. You do really what you naively think to do. You have, as soon as you have an integral over dy, you replace it by lambda and a sum over the j's, over the different sites. And now you started with your five-dimensional gravity before discretization, and I decided to work in that five-dimensional gauge. I should mention that the discretization procedure breaks diff invariance. So I can start with 5D gravity. I have diff invariance. I have 5D diff invariance. I can choose to set my gauge, and I use 5D diff invariance to get to that point. And it's better to set your gauge first, because you know that as soon as you discretize, you're going to lose your 5D diff invariance. And if you're going to get a theory of massive gravity out of it, you know that you're going to be losing your gauge invariance anyways. So you're better off just setting your gauge from the beginning. You have square root minus g now. Before discretization, everything depends on y. And let me work in a 4 plus 1 ADM formalism, where, unlike in usual ADM formalism, the plus 1 is related to the extra dimension and not to the time direction. I can do that, and what I have is, from a five-dimensional point of view, I have this 5D scalar curvature being split into the 4D scalar curvature plus some extrinsic curvature. And I'll be using the same notation as Shinji was using this morning, where the square brackets represent the trace of a given tensor, and here the k-minu corresponds to the extrinsic curvature. And in this gauge, it's simply given by this. So now, out of this 5D theory, I want to discretize it along this process. And all I need to do is to explain what I mean by the y derivative of g mu nu. Or if I'm going to discretize it, this will correspond to a half, and then g mu nu along some side j minus g mu nu along some side j plus 1. I can choose to take this discretization. And so now my action will be something which is manifestly four-dimensional. So I have a sum of local actions, a sum of actions which are just function of the metric on each side. And then I have a sum of actions which corresponds to interactions between the different sides. It corresponds to linking between the different sides. And here I should say, when I do that, I have lambda here. And I'll use the notation that lambda is equal to m minus 1. So I'll see the sum come in. So here I'll have m squared over 4. And then I'll have g mu nu j minus g mu nu j plus 1. And then the same thing, alpha, beta. And then contracted with the metric other side j. So here there's a contraction that comes in. G, j, mu nu, g, j, alpha, beta, minus g, j, mu alpha, g, j, mu beta. That comes in here. And for those of you who are familiar with Wiertz Pauli massive gravity, what you should see coming in here, if I just focus myself on two sides, which I can do to start with, I just see appearing the Wiertz Pauli mass term combination, especially if I choose one of the metric to be fiducial metric, and I set it to be Minkowski. So in this action, we can see that from the local sites, from the local action at each site, we have n copies of 4D diff. But at this level, I break all of the n copies of the 4D diff. I can restore it by adding some Strickovol fields the same way that Shinji mentioned this morning. And for that, I just need to express this metric at the site j plus 1. I need to pull it back at the site j. And this pullback is expressed in terms of Strickovol fields. I can write this in terms of, even though it's a priori invariant in the coordinate transformation of the J site, I can pull it back into the J site and express a tensor out of it. So out of G mu nu J plus 1, I can construct a tensor G mu nu J plus 1, which is D mu. And let me just use the same notation as Shinji this morning, A, and that would be as a side J, D nu phi, and then the so out of this Strickovol field, we really see how the coordinates at one side get pulled back into the coordinates on the other side. So OK, we got out of this discretization straight away a theory of massive gravity from a four-dimensional point of view. And if you're just dealing with the linearized theory, everything is going well. If you sum all the modes that you have at the linearized level, you recover 5D gravity at the linearized level. In particular, you would recover 5D Newton gravity from a five-dimensional point of view out of this, all of these modes. So you have n modes of mass, roughly speaking, m sine n over n. And so for n, little n, much smaller than a capital N, what you get is the same discretization as a Kaluza-Klein decomposition. And at larger n, it becomes slightly different. So from a linearized point of view, everything is working well. Now you want to see how well this theory is doing at recover non-linearized GR once you take into account the non-linearities. And you could, via this Strickovol field, you can introduce the Kolmogorov bosons and extract out the helicity zero mode part of this field. And you can see, and I'm not going to go in the details here, but you can see that the, you have interactions in the theory of massive gravity, in Wiertz Pauli massive gravity, that arise at a strong complex scale, which is given by, if you were just in four-dimensional Wiertz Pauli gravity, it will be m to the 4, m Planck, and to the 5th power. But now, because you're dealing with a lot of gravitons, you have the sum of the gravitons coming in here, and this is the first massive mode, because it's the first massive mode is the one for which its interaction will come in at the lowest possible energy scale. So, and if you want to write that back in terms of five-dimensional variables, what you get is something like that, f r cube over r to the 7. So up here, you'd think that in your discretization procedure, you can always take n to be large enough such that this strong coupling scale, at the interaction at which the lowest massive helicity zero mode interacts, this strong coupling scale could always be pushed above the scale lambda 5 in such a way that you don't need to take into account this strong coupling behavior, and you can recover five-dimensional gravity out of it. However, you can't do that and at the same time keep all the modes that you had in your theory below the five-dimensional, before the five-dimensional scale and below that given cutoff scale, if you want. So I don't know if this is clear. So as Shinji mentioned this morning, in a theory of physical gravity, you have a ghost that comes in at this scale lambda. And you know that from a fundamental point of view, from Fermi point of view, you didn't have a ghost. And this is only consistent if you manage to put the discretization scale, this capital lambda, capital N, or the discretization lambda, which is capital R over N, if you manage to take this quantity small enough such that you push the strong coupling scale above the five-dimensional Planck scale, which is should be your real cutoff of your theory. So you would like to have lambda larger than M5 to be able to have any chance to recover a theory of 5D gravity without a ghost in it. But you have to do that in such a way that you also keep all the modes below this strong coupling scale. So you need at the same time little m being smaller than lambda. And that tells you that you actually have a maximal value n in terms of capital L and M5 that you can look at. And this n only has to be smaller than M5 L over 3/8. So you can send n to infinity, but you have to do so by sending the size of your extra dimension to infinity. So, and that tells you the maximal value you can have for your cutoff scale. When you put all the numbers into the game, what you have is M5 cube over L5 to the 1/8. So now if you want to send L to infinity, you would actually get this thing going to zero. Or in other words, if you want to keep your extra dimension in such a way that L always becomes large, is always larger than the five-dimensional Planck scale, this thing here will always be smaller than your five-dimensional Planck scale. So you cannot discretize your theory from a five-dimensional point of view in such a way that you would keep a ghost below the five-dimensional Planck scale. So you started with a theory of massive, a theory of gravity, which is completely consistent. You started discretized it. You have a tower of different modes from a four-dimensional point of view, which have a strong coupling scale lambda, and actually they have a ghost coming at that scale lambda, and you can never manage to discretize your theory in such a way within this framework such that the scale at which the strong coupling comes in, or which the ghost comes in, gets above the five-dimensional Planck scale. So you just fail in your discretization, and that's the end of the story. So that's the end of the story within this framework of discretization, and up to 10 years ago, what the solution would be that this framework of deconstruction works extremely well for gauge field, but for massive gravity or for interacting spin to fully just fully fails. The spin we could have on it at the moment is more that you know, because you ended up with a theory of massive gravity where the interaction came in at that very low energy scale, that this was not the right way to discretize, and this is not what you should get out of a theory of massive 5D gravity once you discretize. So this is just telling you that you simply failed into your discretization procedure, and that wasn't the right thing to do. One way where you can see that this wasn't the right thing to do in that language is the fact that you had a theory which is extremely nonlinear, and you tried to discretize it at that level. But actually, you know how to express GR in a way which is still nonlinear, but not infinitely nonlinear. You know how to express GR in an Einstein-Cartan formalism, especially in the first-order formalism, in such a way that you only have a finite number of interactions in your theory. And if you start discretizing from this theory, where you only have a finite number of nonlinearities, or if you want a finite number of interactions, you're actually on much better footing to get your discretization procedure, and hopefully to get a theory of massive gravity out of that. I should also emphasize that eventually, I mean, we're just dealing with a boson theory, but eventually you're going to want to have out of this theory something which you can couple to the standard model, something you can couple to fermions, and if you want to start coupling gravity to fermions, you're going to need to work it in the field bound language. So I'll work out here how things work out if you try to discretize in the field bound language. 10 minutes, okay. So if you work in the field bound, you have your five-dimensional metric AB is equal to EA. And you can also work out with in the first order form, and you have your torsion, where you have your connection, omega AB. And if you work in the torsionless setup, where you have d EA plus omega AB wedge EB is equal to zero, and you set your gauge, you can set your 5D leaf gauge in the same way as I did before. So in the field band, this involves that A5 is equal to dy, and EA is simply equal to EA dx. So you set your 5D leaf gauge like this, and you, in the field band language, you also have a 5D Lorentz gauge that you can set, and you can use it to set something about your connection, which eventually, after discretization, will end up being the condition for the symmetric field bind. So if you set omega AB y anything is zero from the 5D Lorentz. From the torsionless, 5D torsionless condition, what you will end up having is E A mu dy E B mu, and the antisymmetric part of that eta A B is equal to zero. So you start with 5D GI in the same way. In the field band, you can write it as epsilon A B C D E RAB wedge EC wedge ED wedge EE. And you have your five-dimensional Planck scale here. And now you'll do the discretization exactly in the same way as you did before, only instead of replacing G mu nu, the y derivative of G mu nu, by the difference G mu nu at one site minus G mu nu at another site, you do the same thing in terms of the field bind. And because they're non-linearly related, it's of course not the same thing. So you're not going to be doing this, but instead what you do is dy e a mu. This you replace it by e a mu at one side minus e a mu at another side. So let's work out, if I decide to use this discretization procedure, let me work out what it corresponds to in terms of the metric itself, and that's where the K, not this K, but the K Shinchi wrote this morning, will pop out. So I have the K menu being this. So the extrinsic curvature is a half dy menu, so that I can write as E y mu dy E b mu plus dy e a mu e b nu eta a b. And now I'll do the discretization procedure as written over there. And now what that will give me is a half e a mu e b at one side, and then here will be at the same side, nu minus e b nu at another side, and the next side. And then the same thing with mu goes to mu. And what I end up out of it is back to g mu nu, and then I have minus a half e a j mu e b j plus 1 nu eta a b, and the symmetric version of that. But actually, if I'm working in the field bind language, these two things are the same, so I can remove the symmetric part in the symmetric field bind, which is there. For Anna, I'm just going to focus on the two-site setup because that's what's going to simplify my life, and I want to see how I recover massive gravity out of that. But if I'm working with different sites, as many sites as I want, I can work out a theory of multiple gravitons as I want to. So let me just set EJ. I'll focus A mu on one site, and then EA J plus 1 mu is F mu. And if I construct the k mu nu out of it, which is g mu alpha k alpha nu, what I will have is from here delta mu nu. And what I will have out of it is the inverse of the field bind associated with that one, and then the normal field bind associated with the other one. So I'll have e mu a f a nu. But actually, if you went back to the metric language, this is nothing else but the square root of the inverse metric G at the site J contracted with the metric at the site J plus 1, the square root of this. And so in this discretization procedure, what it corresponds to is each time you have an extrinsic curvature which morally corresponds to the derivative of the metric in this discretization, what you replace it for is the curly K mu nu that Shinji wrote this morning, which is directly written in terms of the delta, and then the contraction of the inverse metric on one side and the metric on the other side. If at the end of the day I'm just focusing on the action at one given side, what I will have is no dynamics for this metric, so this will just be a fiducial metric, and I'll have a theory of massive gravity on top of this fiducial metric. If, on the other hand, I want to integrate out of all my sites, what I will have is a dynamics for all of the metrics, G and F and all of the ones are J's, and we'll have a multiple interacting gravity theory with this K mu nu structure coming in. So this is what you have to do. So out of your 5D theory, what you get straight away is a theory of massive gravity where you know how to interact your different gravitons with one another. And you started with, for the interaction, you had the k squared minus k squared from the ADM decomposition of your 5D gravity. And now here in the discretization, what you will get is simply the curly k squared minus the curly k squared, which is the correct mass term for massive gravity. You can also get all of the other mass terms that Shinji mentioned this morning by simply changing the way you want to write this thing here, not the one that you differentiate, but the one with respect to whom you had. So you could have had the average of the two metrics if you wanted to, the two field bounds at that level. And that would have reproduced all the different terms that would come in. Okay. One of the good news as well is if you have this, having discretized in the field bound, what you know that you end up with is a theory of massive gravity or multiple graviton from a four-dimensional point of view, which strong interaction scale is actually the scale, not lambda 5 that I wrote before, is no longer the scale M4 and Planck to the fifth, which did go to infinity as n went to infinity, but not enough compared to the five-dimensional Planck scale. What you end up in this theory instead is a higher strong coupling scale, one-third, and actually you can always make that scale larger than the five-dimensional Planck scale if you need to. So that tells you that it is a consistent discretization procedure you have for your theory. And by having the discretization scale small enough, you can make all the strong coupling effect coming in above the five-dimensional Planck scale. So in the minus 3 minutes that I have left, let me just tell you what you can do new and interesting out of this theory. And this is related to some work did by Kurt Hinterblischer 2 months ago related to the existence of potential new kinetic term in this theory, in our theory of massive gravity. Yeah?
So before discretizing, the scale of the theory is 5. So are you saying that discretization procedure raises the cutoff?
No. From a five-dimensional point of view, it's just M5. Now you start discretizing and you put a new scale in the gain, And if you're just going to get a Fields-Pauli gravity, you know that your strong coupling scale is going to be the lambda 5. And this lambda 5 is actually always smaller than M5, just because you introduce a new scale in your theory. If you discretize it the way you should do it, then you have another strong coupling scale, but you can make it be above the five-dimensional Planck scale. So the cutoff is still M5 in this, if you include from a 5D point of view. I mean, if I'm discretizing, if you discretize it like that, then what you will have for the scattering amplitude, the smallest energy scale will be this one. But I would say you need to take, that's a good question. You tell me I'm gonna get something out of nothing. So it's probably M5. It's probably that, assuming that this is smaller than M5. And when you reach M5, it will be M5. Yeah, no, but I think Albert is saying, naively, if this can become larger than M5, then you would think, naively, after discretization, you have that the first interactions arises at M5. There's an N in here, but I think this will, what I should say, this is the scale at which the helicity zero modes start interacting with one another. And then there's also gravity, just the H, the helicity 2, they interact at the scale M5. So this is the lowest energy scale, assuming that it is smaller than M5. So assuming that it is smaller than M5, this will be the smallest energy scale at which interaction come in. The problem was before you could never make that being of the order M5. So even when you sent the discretization scale to landscape rule zero, you would never be able to reach the full 5D theory. Now you're able to send the interaction at which the helicity zero mode start interacting with itself above the scale M5. That doesn't tell you that you can trust your theory all the way up to that scale if this scale is larger than M5. Because there is the number of interacting graviton that comes in the game, and then that tells you that this M Planck is related to the five-dimensional one with the number total number of graviton coming in. So it reduces the interaction scale by the capital M. Yeah. So let me just. Do you have 1 minute? Okay. So. At this level, this is a nice feature. You could get very, very easily massive gravity out of five-dimensional gravity. And if you didn't know anything about this means of the K, et cetera, or how to write a consistent go-through theory of massive gravity, you could have got it straight away in this procedure. And having shown that this procedure works out, now you can think, well, if you have a mass for your graviton, then you have 5 degrees of freedom. So a priori, there's no, well, I shouldn't say that, but maybe you could allow yourself for the possibility to change the kinetic term of your graviton. The usual square root R under the GR term is the only term you can write down for the kinetic term for a helicity spin to field that satisfies 4D diff invariants. But you know that you're going to be breaking 4D diff invariants anyways, that you're going to be introducing some new degrees of freedom anyways because you give a mass to your graviton. So it's possible that you can change your kinetic term. And if you just focus yourself in linearized diff rather than nonlinear diff, actually Kurt showed a few months ago that there's all the kinetic terms that you could write down which evade the ghost, the equivalent of the Bolwer-Deser ghost, which are the form A, B, C, D, A prime, B prime, C prime, D prime, H, A prime, H, B, B prime, D, C prime, H, D, D prime. So if you focus yourself on linearized diff, And you're going to stick up about this field by saying HAB is DA DB, the longitudinal mode of your spin 2 mode. Then up here, this when you put it in here, it has more than two derivatives, but because it comes with this Levi-Civita fully antisymmetric symbol that comes in there, the total derivatives, the high derivatives completely cancel, and this term out of linear space is completely fine. Now, if you want to include nonlinearity, if actually when you Stokobolize it, you also have to include terms which go like that. So this term just by itself is not okay, but maybe there can be an extension of this term which could be okay, in which we tell you that there are new kinetic terms available for massive gravity as soon as you add a mass for your graviton. So on the one hand, you can say, well, that's possible. On the other hand, you could say, well, let me say, this is my theory with some extension of that. I don't know, maybe there's a K here, because after all, I like to replace some H's by K's. And then there's a mass term, etc. And I know that if as soon as I add a mass for my graviton, then my graviton has 5 degrees of freedom. If it has 5 degrees of freedom, I don't need to have the symmetry, the 4D diff, in my kinetic term anymore. And then maybe I can add these things here. This is nice, but you could also think, well, I can take these two things independently. And if I set this thing to zero, then at the Nino's level, I don't have a theory of massive gravity, and so I know that I shouldn't be allowed to add any other kinetic term for your graviton. So if this new kinetic term for your graviton comes in, they must be linked to the mass of the graviton itself in such a way that you should not be able to send this scale to zero, to send that scale to zero without simultaneously sending that scale to zero. Now, maybe you can see that from a five-dimensional point of view, and maybe there is a natural candidate from a five-dimensional point of view, which is actually the Gauss-Bonnet terms. So I showed you how if you start with 5D gravity, you get 4D massive gravity out of it. And in terms of the kinetic structure for your 4D massive gravity, it's really just the minus k, the four-dimensional term that comes out of it. Now, it's possible if you add a Gauss-Bonnet term, let me add something else here. That could potentially give you a new kinetic term for 4D massive gravity. And you can see in that language that you're actually not allowed to send the mass of the graviton in massive gravity to zero without sending this to zero as well, because this mass of the graviton came in from the discretization procedure and is tied into that scale. But you can't send that to zero and keep that term alive, because from a 5D point of view, you cannot have the Gauss-Bonnet term surviving out of the four-dimensional scalar curvature term. That would break your effective field theory. So from this five-dimensional picture, it's consistent how you could potentially have new kinetic terms arising, but they would be locked with the mass of the graviton as well. And now you can do the ADM discretization, the ADM split, and do the discretization that you worked out. In the ADM, these kind of new kinetic terms look like k epsilon, epsilon, k a prime, k b prime, and then r c d, c prime, d prime. And now if you do the discretization procedure that I mentioned in the field bind, that just amounts to replacing this extrinsic curvature by this funny business of the metric or the interaction between the two metrics in this simple way. A priori, that could allow yourself for a new interaction, kinetic interactions in massive gravity, which would have no ghost. If you do the naive decoupling limit argument and you put in here the helicity zero mode, not just associated with the linear diff, but associated with the full nonlinear diff, this k is built in still to give you the dA, dA prime pi, and such that this thing is doesn't actually have higher derivatives. However, when you do a proper analysis of that term and any other term that you get from a Gauss-Bonnet in five dimension, or anything else you would have got from something consistent from a five-dimensional point of view, you always end up with a ghost from a four-dimensional perspective. So this is just to tell you that from a natural, what you can naturally things you could write down from a family point of view, and you can naturally think it could be ghost free potentially, what you end up as in terms of new kinetic terms is always pathological from a 4D membership point of view. Now, this is not a, this is just an intuitive argument in telling you that there's probably no other kinetic term coming in that you can write down for four-dimensional massive gravity. There's actually a very general proof that you can write down that as soon as you want to allow yourself for the Stückeborg field giving back nonlinear as diff, what you get is always a ghost in a four-dimensional point of view as soon as you try to get something different than your standard scalar curvature term. So from that perspective, it looks like you cannot write any other kinetic term for massive gravity. Yeah, I'll stop here.
For one quick question. So there was one reason I thought this Gauss-Bonnet thing wouldn't actually give you the right kinetic term, because the counting doesn't quite seem to work. So suppose I'm looking for massive gravity in five dimensions. There would be two ghost-free quasi-linear terms that I'm looking for. So I would be discretizing a six-dimensional theory down to five. But still, there's only one Gauss-Bonnet I can write down in six dimensions.
Oh, no, this thing gives you two. It gives you two things. I just wrote it like that, but you can have GAB. K, B, B prime, sorry, A prime, B, B prime. So you have this one, this one, these two are new. And then, of course, if you have J, A prime, J, sorry, G, A, A prime, G, B, B prime, that gives you the standard kinetic, the standard scalar curvature.
Okay, but in higher dimensions, you're just writing down diff and variance, right? You're just writing down things which are Gauss-Bonnet?
Yeah, all the Lovelock terms, yeah.
So if I was starting six dimensions, it would still only be R plus the Gauss-Bonnet.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So I could never, it seems I'm only getting one term instead of the two that I would expect from the quasi-linear thing.
Yeah, your counting is not the one Gauss-Bonnet terms give you just one new interaction. That's what I'm saying here. Out of one Gauss-Bonnet term, you have two new interactions already in 5D. That one you wouldn't have seen it in your language, mm-hmm. because it's identical to the scalar curvature. So you wouldn't have seen it. All I'm saying is that in that counting, it's not a one-to-one correspondence.
I see. Okay. Thanks. Okay. Well, let's thank Claudia again.